It was lunch, and she was eating a small meal, saucer meat brown roll and a cup of tea. I was having a bowl of rested mutton soup and a coffee. We were sitting in Salati's tea room, at least in her mind's eye. She was spinning small palm of the hand tales, reminiscences, not full-blown yarns, of when she was younger, of sitting at a table with her girlfriends and watching the young men through the windows facing the commercial street saunter down from the Anderson High School, of the lingering taste of Salati's vanilla ice cream on a Saturday when a special trip had been made from the country to the tune, of a time when she was young enough to wonder what the future might hold, that it wasn't coming fast enough, but almost here. Plumbing, electricity, radio, television, oil development, and so much employment. That shimmering of being a young woman in a world changing so quickly, filled with the potential and fear of future choices, that the present has become a foreign country. This would be the native land for her sons and daughters, and now grandchildren. For them, this would be Fair to Meet Cafe, but they would know it was often still referred by the old folk as Salati's, even when they had never known the origin of its name. That name was of another time, another past and present, when, like many Italian immigrants, Alexander Salati and his brother followed the herring fishing industry, establishing a tea room in Shetland shortly after the turn from the 19th to the 20th century, and according to Dr. Ian Tate of the Shetland Archives, did a booming business in ice cream and lemonade. Here, too, for many, the present was becoming devilish, with a business open on the Sabbath selling the sin of ice cream to Shetland youths. For evangelicals, what future this when the present was so foreign that the souls were sold for the taste of sweetness and chill? But surfacing from the past to the present of a saucer meat roll and a rested mutton soup, we were transported from Salati's tea room to Pete's Cafe, newly opened in this present, and I sat across from an old friend, grateful that we could reminisce together. Her recollections would never become mine to tell, but would become mine to recount. Both of us sitting at this lunch table, now old enough to know what the future would hold soon enough. Her palm of the hand stories and slightly nostalgic look in her eyes gave the past a solidity, like the fishing meads written about by Charlie Simpson. Points on land that Shetland fishermen used to use before GPS to navigate the best fishing shoals and the safest entrance route to harbor. I was grateful for a sense of the past that was solid and shared in kindness, a gift, even as I felt it begin to melt as we took our leave after lunch. Isn't that what Mark said? All that is solid melts into air. But I've never been able to face with sober senses the real conditions of life. The air becomes filled with fog, and the meads no longer visible on the horizon. The past, a distant shore, no starlight to set an astrolabe. The present, a distant land, never quite visible, only the stuff of stories. And the future a kind of mythology of competing cartographic dreams of wealth and individual success, of progress and equality, of community and belonging, of coercion and compliance, of identity and that which always lies underneath, violence. Maybe that was the price of reading Irving Goffman when I was young and of having found a language which frames reality as something constructed out of our daily conversations, our teamwork together of trying to save face and avoid embarrassment, our investments in each other as ways of avoiding imposter syndrome, the social safety found in the routines, rituals, and little dishonesties of small talk. We gather each other up in forms of recollection and retrospection, finding a place for each other in collective remembrances. Sometimes we argue over the details, but less so the genre of the story. No, the genre is usually clear. What Goffman would call the definition of the situation, the framework. And it seemed to me when I was young, most often a way of forgetting that it could have been otherwise. But I suppose that is the callousness of youthful masculinity, an amnesic sense of certainty of knowing how it really is, and feeling a certain self-righteousness in the compulsive telling it how it is on one hand, and such doubt and insecurity of being found a charlatan on the other. A toxic brew of certainty and self-righteousness, doubt and insecurity, masked by the cruel optimism of anthropology to bear witness in publications read by so few. Over the past years, I've tried to understand the Shetland identity not as a self-evident descriptive category, but rather as a constitutive assemblage of practices and feelings which create the very sense that there is such a category. As I've aged, increasingly alienated, I have found some small respite in my own entanglement with this identity work, like today at Salati's. The clarity and wistful nostalgia of my friend, her memories a mead to chart time's passage as I walked to the other end of Commercial Street. I was heading to the Viking bus station to inquire about the schedule to Walls, and possibly to some borough airport. But the bus station is long gone, with no waiting room, closed as a council cost-saving measure a decade ago. There are only electronic scheduling boards in the terminal bus park to board. One can download an app to your smartphone for the schedule and pay your fare by credit card in each bus. Years ago, maybe the mid-90s, I was startled at this bus station by what seemed like a sudden manifestation on the back wall of the bus parking lot of a mural. To me, it seemed to pop into existence, but given that some of the mural paint was faded and peeling, it had been there for some time. But my first impression was of the uncanny, as if memory was being excreted through the concrete. The local paper, the Shetland Times, described the mural simply as, quote, featuring a man pulling out a roll of color photographs from a huge 35mm film roll, end quote. But that description didn't quite capture the oddness. The man was struggling, pulling a rope with all his body weight leaning against firm resistance, muscular left thigh and both forearms bent, right leg stock straight, refusing to give ground. The man was generic. He could be a Shetlander, but there's no telling. He was slim, fit, muscular, and white. While his back is turned to the viewer, he's wearing navy blue athletic shorts, pale blue t-shirt and trainers, the background color of the Shetland flag, the imagined body of anonymous modern consumer wearing the uniform of recreation, not profession. The whole conceit was off. 35mm rolls of film weren't spring-loaded. The film's negative should have flowed from the canister without struggle, and the canister was eerily exact, clearly marked as having 24 frames, even a serial number, and two references to the manufacturer, ICI, Imperial Chemicals International. In his tug of war, what I would later think of as a tug of war with memory itself, the man could only pull 8 frames from the canister, but these weren't negatives. Rather, positives, as if the struggle of pulling the frames into the present developed the photos. And the strip of photos were also uncanny. Reading from left to right, from film struggling man to film canister, the first frame was of the Geyser Jarl in full Viking regalia. He held a raven shield in one hand and a ceremonial battle axe in the other, while behind him a Viking gallery burned on land. A reference to Shetland's annual January Fire Festival, Europe's largest, Apulia. The next frame was picturesque fishing boats in Scalloway Harbour on a spring day, with a view of the Scalloway Castle in the background, the industrial present counterposed to the ruins of the past. The third was of Shetland nature, maybe in the summer. Puffins, bunksies, arctic terns, skuas, and otter posed so unnaturally close that they appeared like a diorama in a museum of natural history. The fourth was of buses. Not buses of the 90s, but buses from the 50s, before the era of oil widened rolls and roll-on and roll-off ferries, when a trip to town was a trip, not a daily commute to work or shop. The next reached even further back in time, perhaps the middle of the 19th century. A woman gathering peat to burn in her croft, just visible in the background. Unlike the frame of the Jarl, there's little sense of a glorious past, but the hard scrabble of the truck system. She struggles to lift her kishi, a straw basket overloaded with peat. The next frame, a more recent past, but even when I first saw this mural, oddly nostalgic. An oil platform being floated out, towed past the Shetland coastline to the Brent and Ninian oil fields in 1975, emblematic of the present that was yet to be. That future is seen receding into the last two images, the seventh and eighth. Four seemingly disaffected young folks are presented in Lurick's Market Cross. A woman sits on a windowsill reading a paper. A man leans against another window. Another man is standing eating a fish and chips dinner. In the right front of the seventh frame, a young man with a partial buzz cut, leather jacket, Doc Martens boots, walks across the frame. He looks down. None of the figures interact with each other. Each seems contained, lone, unproductive. The portrait of Shetland youth? Perhaps facing a future of economic decline with the waning of oil on the Shetland economy, a portrait of loss. The final frame is children playing on the Victoria Pier. A little girl skips rope. Three boys look at a dog, a Great Dane. Another child looks at boats with their sails raised in the harbor. In the background is the Coast Guard emergency rescue vessel. When I first saw this mural, it was as if this frame was destabilized in this context, as if it should have come prior to the one of the Market Cross, as if one should have known that these small, playful children may well grow into the disaffected youth of the prior frame. Here, within the tug of war of memory, the role of film is stuck. The last frame is not completely pulled out from the canister. At the time, 30 years ago, I was startled by the sudden appearance of a mural I must have so often overlooked. I shouldn't have been so surprised. The tourist marketing slogans of the Shetland Island Council at the time were two: Shetland, the natural choice, and my favorite, Shetland, more than you ever imagined. A collection of impossible images, referencing different times, each a very particular icon of affect and memory on a single roll of film, as if a time-traveling tourist gazed at Shetland through a viewfinder, snapshots of a generalized past and present, a confabulation of postcards. It didn't take long for this uncanny sensation to recede, a few short days, and I no longer noticed the mural at all. Just background. Only my field notes to later disturb the sediments of recall. I don't know when this peeling mural was scraped off the Harling. I do know that with the opening of a new Shetland museum and archives at Hayes Dock in 2007, a new mural was painted to celebrate the museum's exhibitions and collections on this bus parking lot wall. On a white background, over 40 artifacts were presented in photographic detail. Each artifact was presented singularly at their own scale, separate fragments of a deeper history, deeper than the Viking Age, almost geological, reflecting the new museum and archives' vast collection of objects, reflecting Shetland's designation as a UNESCO Global Geopark and the 4,000 years of human habitation in Shetland. In extremely large sans-serif font, amidst this assemblage was the tagline, "Discover Shetland's heritage." Time colonized as heritage, and heritage naturalized as geologic by the strategic investments of Shetland's Amenity Trust, whose mission, according to their website, is to, quote, preserve and enhance everything that is distinctive about Shetland's cultural and natural heritage, promoting access to it, whether physical or intellectual, to further enhance the heritage and cultural experience for local Shetland people and visitors to our island, end quote. An official version of collective memory. Brand Shetland. Walking the length of Commercial Street, from Salati's, now Pete's, past Jameson's Knitwear and the Market Cross, past Fort Charlotte and the Fort Cafe and Takeaway, all places that remained in my present and past, not taking much note of the new high-end restaurants, nail salons, as well as vacant shops, I suppose that the froth of identity work, that compulsion to confabulate and make visible life lived within the inventions of traditions, had settled down. Certainly it seemed that way. A new mural had been painted on the bus parking lot wall in 2018, part of a project to celebrate Scotland's Year of Young People in 2018. School barons throughout Shetland had submitted ideas for the new mural. A French graffiti artist, but based in Inverness, who runs the Fresh Paint Mural Program, Mark Delay, was commissioned to lead a select group of Shetland young folks to spray paint a new design. With funding and sponsorship from the Shetland Islands Council, Amenity Trust, the Lerwick Community Council and the Shetland Association of Youth Clubs, as well as the Rotary Club and commercial interests like Tesco's and Rexall, and finally the local branch of the Public Service Workers Union, Unison, a much simpler design was spray painted on the wall by these young folks. Large, colorful, not particularly detailed, evergreen images of orcas breaking the sea's surface, a red fishing trawler on placid water, a yellow gannet with spread wings rising, a single sheep looking up from grazing, and two children staring from the wall at the viewer as a brown Shetland pony stares at them. Some of the mural is obstructed by the bus shelters that stand in front of the mural. While not faded, all these images seem to have receded to the background, easily forgotten as generic and emblematic. Instagrams of Brand Shetland. And of course, as you may have suspected, I was wrong. The past hadn't settled down. These images were generic and emblematic. I had seen variations of them before on the websites and social media channel of Promote Shetland, constructed by MB Communications, a digital marketing company that since 2011 has received marketing contracts from the Shetland Islands Council, and which rebranded Shetland with the tagline, Islands of Opportunity, beginning in 2020. Opportunities taken, opportunities lost, still the shimmering of the present becoming a foreign country in futures that might be otherwise for those who are young enough, perhaps dreaming enough to enter. I was wrong and had forgotten that aspects of Shetland were always actual and material and virtual and imagined, that Shetland folk were always early adopters of communications technologies and placed their memories elsewhere now. What was real were the continued stories spun from the precarity and joy of daily lives. Photographs and memoirs shaped by the many local Facebook history groups on Shetland, the constant argumentation on internet discussion boards like Shetlink, of tweets and posts in dialect, of YouTube channels that promote the dialect and those that poke fun at the hubris of those in charge, of marketing sites like Shetland.org and the digitized holding of the Shetland Archives, whose archivists I imagine not as miners taking artifacts and rare objects out of the past, but placing them within to be mined by others for other histories and other memories and other stories of other possible Shetlands in the future. The St. Magna Street tapes are a confabulated community's production. produced and written and narrated by Jonathan Church. Special thanks to the Pixabay community member, Anyanchenko Music, and Fat Frog Studios for musical interludes. This series has been made possible by the generous support of Arcadia University, especially Frank and Evelyn Steinbrucker.